This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
We've talked to a growing number of active and aspiring restaurateurs, but today we've not had a conversation with someone building a catering and events business. Many of us have a predisposed idea of quote-unquote catered food, but in recent years we've seen a new wave of food events making its way around the country, specifically here in New York City. Amongst others, chefs like Devon Francis and Wolby Reyes are sharing their culinary culture in exciting new ways with their guests.
And our guests today are doing just that with Eastern European cuisine and building their business, Dacha 46, from the ground up after a successful run of pop-ups, including a term at our previous guest, Libby Lark's space, Kit, or Keep in Touch. So we're excited to welcome, fresh off of a funded Kickstarter campaign, chefs Jessica and Trina Quinn. Welcome to the show. We're so excited to chat with you both. We donated to the Kickstarter campaign. I guess we Kickstarted. We were part of the campaign, so we're really excited to see it come to fruition. Tell us a little bit about Dacha 46 and, you know, your pop-up journey to date.
So we started Dacha 46 in October of 2020 out of our apartment in Bed-Stuy. We live on the fourth floor, and it just sort of started as a project during COVID while both Trina and myself were out of work and we weren't in restaurants, and, you know, we were starving for something productive to do with our time. And we were already cooking this Eastern European food for ourselves at home. And it was comforting in a time that was really scary for a lot of us. And it just completely snowballed and blossomed into what it's become today.
And tell us what that is today.
So we've been doing Dacha 46 now for just over a year. And we have been very lucky and have had so many of our friends and colleagues, and honestly, also people that we never knew prior, who we've been able to have the privilege to get to know through the process of creating Dacha 46, open up their restaurants and kitchens to us to really let us explore and play and really kind of tap into all the different communities in Brooklyn. And we, like you had mentioned, and thank you so much for donating, we were able to completely fund our Kickstarter goal and are in the process of looking for a permanent commercial kitchen space for us so we can keep expanding.
Super exciting. So the plan is to continue with the pop-ups and sort of pivots to catering, or, you know, what's the goal?
So I think the issue we've been having is I feel like we're not ready to kind of slap a label on it yet.
Okay.
And I think, you know, for a Kickstarter, in order for a pop-up, I guess, to kind of be recognized, it had to fit into a box. So we had to put catering on. Although we do dinners, but they're small dinners, essentially. We're not capable of catering with a two-person operation. But I think when we started Dacha, we kind of wanted it to slowly grow. And I think it kind of grew a lot faster than we anticipated, because we were honestly just doing it to, you know, kind of, you know, keep working. And, you know, so I think we're kind of trying to take it slow. And part of Dacha is, you know, we're trying to figure out different streams of revenue, especially after working in restaurants for so long. We saw after, you know, during COVID, like what happens to a business when, you know, it's all or nothing. And I think we're being careful.
Yeah, we kind of saw the reality of what happens when you rely on one stream of revenue, and that, you know, stream is essentially just completely combusted because of something that's out of your control. And so I think a lot of chefs and restaurant owners and business owners, I think, started to really reevaluate what the you know, the industry could look like and what would the restaurant model look like, because it felt like during COVID, while everything was obviously in flux and no one really knew what was going on, it was sort of a chance to turn the page and rewrite the narrative and the story to, you know, best suit our needs for the first time. And it was something that we realized that we really get to play a firsthand role in.
So you guys are currently on the hunt for a commercial kitchen, is that right?
Yeah. So we are in our full-fledged looking for a commercial kitchen. The first thing also that we said we were going to do if we made our Kickstarter was get a company car, which we just brought home little Shuba last week. We named her. And hopefully she is going to be our Pelmeni mobile that we're going to drive around town. And so we had an exciting announcement that we've been holding off on, but starting this week, we will be launching our retail line of frozen pelmeni going forward.
Very cool. And tell us, where are those launching?
So starting off, the only place that's going to carry them currently is going to be Poppy's and Cobble Hill.
Exciting. And then will you have like an e-commerce D2C model with that too? Or are you planning to try to be like mostly wholesale to grocery? And
it's going to mostly be wholesale right now. I think it's been nice because we've been able to have this ability to collaborate with these different businesses and foster personal connections with them. And so we really like the idea of staying sort of in touch with how we started and having this like small community of people who, you know, have been there since the beginning. And it's, you know, it's nice to have like a small network that, you know, has wanted to showcase what we're making and who we trust.
And what's the, tell us about your plan, I guess, a little bit. I know that you said you're hesitant to check a box, but if you go into wholesale frozen product and it does as well as it should do, how do you grow? Do you intend to have someone else produce? Because you could, you know, foreseeably go from 0 to 60 with a big account, right?
Yeah, so that's one of the things. So like, even to go back what you initially had asked, like we want to do frozen pelmeni, we want to do dinners, we want to do pop-ups, we want to do collaborations. We really like this model. And, you know, obviously it'd be easier if we had our own space where it's a, you know, possible like storefront, you know, facing, like customer facing. But, you know, that's going to be only one aspect of what we're trying to do. And I think we're going to keep it, you know, within our ability right now to produce, you know, the two of us, which we can do pretty high volume. But yeah, we're going to keep taking everything pretty small and slow, but, you know, do our best to produce like a higher volume.
At the same time, if we land a giant account, listen,
we'll do our best to figure it out.
We talk about profit
Whole
margins.
Foods, if you're listening. No, I'm just kidding.
Listen, we talk about profit margins all the time. And a lot of the things we do, in all honesty, and I think there's a lot of reservation with business owners giving full transparency, a lot of the things we do and a lot of the pop-ups we hold and different projects that we care about that we love doing, they don't always necessarily really foot the bill. They don't necessarily, you know, they're not a huge bang for the buck sometimes. So we talk about how our pelmeni really has become our bread and butter. And so, yes, if we got a large account, if that's something that allows us to really tap into that freedom and expansion, we will absolutely say yes, happily.
But not right now.
But not right now. Okay. Not today. What? But maybe tomorrow. So just because maybe not everybody is familiar, and you guys have a very specific like region, tell everybody what pelmeni is, just in case they don't know.
Yeah. So like most cultures, pelmeni are sort of, they're the dumpling of Eastern Europe. And
they're the peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah. we joke about it, but so yeah, they're dumplings, and primarily they come with a traditional filling of minced meat and onion with seasoning, and they're just boiled from frozen, and you can top them with whatever you want. Most traditional toppings are either smetana, which is like a Eastern European, just thicker sour cream, or like a creme fraiche with dill and lots of pepper. A lot of Eastern Europeans, myself included, love a combination of butter and vinegar. But they really are this, you know, very stalwart, humble dish that, you know, you grow up eating, and it's something that every family has their own recipe and their own traditions around it. But it's definitely a staple in the region.
And where did your recipe come from? Is this a family recipe, or is it something you all have tweaked together throughout the pop-up?
We have definitely tweaked it. We've played a lot with this recipe over the years. And, you know, with COVID, once again, had a lot of free time on our hands. And this was like a project that we just delved into, not, you know, looking to create a business out of it, but it was just something that is really comforting to eat. It's comforting to make. It's laborious and time consuming. And it's something that you can really just kind of zone out, because it takes a long time. And we make, at this point, we're making thousands and thousands of dumplings. But so we've definitely played with the recipe, and we've been using this recipe for the last year, and we're quite pleased with it.
And then tell us, like, why the need came for the Kickstarter. Like, what was the impetus, and for like, why was now the time? What was the impetus? What really, like, you know, lit the fire for it?
I think for us, we really only saw two options. We could either take the leap and dedicate ourselves full time to Dacha 46, which meant that we definitely needed more capital to do that, or we would have to take some of our focus away from Dacha 46 and get jobs working in restaurants again. And I think that when we were faced with that reality, we realized that we didn't really want to take any time away from, like, this baby of ours. And so, you know, we didn't qualify for a bank loan because we haven't been in existence for the minimum of 2 years that's required by most banks. We didn't really want to go the investor out because we're still so new, and we're still new to the idea of this autonomy and freedom of working for ourselves. We didn't really want to relinquish that freedom really either to an investor, and at least not this early in, you know, in the game, where we're really just figuring out who we are, what we stand for, what our voice is. And so we have seen some of our friends do Kickstarter and have great success with it. Our very good friend, Jeremy, who just opened Augie's Counter, we noticed actually recently, so we didn't realize it at first, but he had launched his Kickstarter on exactly the same day, 1 year prior to us. But we've just kind of seen sort of the, just the success and the autonomy and the idea of crowdsourcing from, like, your community that you can have through Kickstarter. So that's sort of why we went that way.
And you guys were successful in funding your campaign, and you raised, I think it was, like, when I looked, it was like 45K about.
We ended up walking with just under 42.
Just under 42. Awesome. And so break it down for us. Like, what is that getting you? How much runway does that give you, you know, in terms of, like, getting to your next project and all that kind of stuff? Like, where are you spending the money? Tell us all the things.
Yeah. The idea was, if we could find something that would float us for the next 6 months while we generate a steady stream of revenue, it would get us the car that we needed, because a lot of money goes out the window with car rentals and Ubers and all this other stuff. And also, we really do want to be able to do more deliveries. So it was a car. It's definitely equipment. At this point, we've been, like we said, very fortunate with our friends letting us use their kitchens, but it's also definitely time for us to get a kitchen of our own. So basically, it's equipment, it's a lease, and it was the car. And those were, like, the three major hitters for us.
And where are you in the process of looking for space? What is it that you're looking for, and how will that help to, like, propel the brand to the next phase?
We are actually in the middle of possibly at least having a temporary kitchen for a couple months, which hopefully we will be able to announce soon. But once we have that kitchen in place, we are ready to go full throttle to start doing weekly menus, which is essentially going to be the same idea as, like, a pop-up model, but we'll do it several days a week, and we'll be able to create consistency for at least a couple months, so everybody can know, on this date at this time, you can come to this location and pick up a selection of items from Dacha 46. And along with that, we'll be able to take on more custom orders. as well as hopefully do a couple more collaborations, at least over winter for the holidays.
I also think a big thing for us is that, you know, since we started up until this point, we've only really been able to do like Dacha 46 takeout. And so we have dreamt of and talked about the moment where we can actually, you know, have a sit down dinner on actual plates and use actual glasses and, you know, kind of really get to live out the dream that we always talk of, showing Eastern European cuisine in a different light that's a little more upscale and it's a little more modern and it's a little more chic than people, you know, give it credit for. And so hopefully the space will allow for that kind of, you know, entertaining as well.
So will that, in essence, serve as a restaurant?
We're waiting for that.
I don't
want to
put the box on there, but it is. It sounds a lot like a restaurant.
If it looks like a restaurant, it smells like a restaurant.
But if you don't call it a restaurant, maybe it's not a restaurant.
Is it a permitting thing? Is it a legal thing?
I don't know.
Are we treading water on somewhere?
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes.
Yes, I don't know. I love it. What is the, you know, you're intentionally not going for a restaurant, you're intentionally going for something else. Is that, you know, like, is that a lifestyle choice? Is it just like you're not ready to be there given like PTSD from being in the industry, or is it just you want to experiment and see what else you can
it
do?
It might be a combination of all of it. but also, I genuinely think for us, I think that you touched upon it with the lifestyle choice. I think, and we talk about it with all of our friends and colleagues in this industry, that I think we've all gotten so used to just what the industry standard was and what the expectation was. And, you know, like you have a little taste of freedom and you want a little more. And I think that, we are trying to figure out how do you not sacrifice yourself while still making people happy and really putting out the best possible product that you can, because there's clearly a way to do it. We are just, it's sort of like an experiment in progress.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely think people are doing that now. I think like you're right. People got a taste of like freedom and this work-life balance. And I think we're seeing that reflected in people choosing to have less business hours. And actually it's come up a lot as a theme on this show this season, okay, in particular, yeah, of like
4-day work week.
I'm only opening 4 days. Right. Yeah. And seeing that as, I mean, I think Eric from Ursula does that really well in Crown Heights with only opening a few days a week and having restricted hours, and or he's 5 days a week. But, you know, and so I think I definitely think like your way is awesome too. It's just, it's been interesting to see this season, this coming up a lot as like people being creative with restricting hours and changing the model a little bit to have more work-life balance, which is obviously deserved and warranted and just needed.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the market for commercial space that you're looking at the moment, is because you're not looking necessarily at storefront restaurant spaces, right? You have alternative choices and the things that'll fit your budget maybe better. But what is it? Is it harder to find? Is it something that you could build from the ground up?
Well, that's the thing. It's like we're not ready for an entire build out either. Listen, if we found our dream space and it needed a build out, maybe it's something that we would consider, but I think it's harder to find something that doesn't, you know, fit the mold because we don't fit the mold. It's not necessarily a commissary kitchen. It's not necessarily a storefront. So it's like, what are you? So we've been touring, you know, a bunch of different places that have the possibility to be a couple of different things, but it's definitely harder to find sort of this place that lives in ambiguity in the way that we operate.
And so for when you do find a space, is the goal for now to continue producing and putting stuff out before you get the space, or is like next, are you guys sort of on temporary hiatus? Tell us where you are at this moment.
No, we're not on hiatus. We are still very fortunately working out of our friends' restaurants, and they're allowing us to produce. Eric's been from Ursula, been incredible and has allowed us to work out of his space for months on end, and you know, and in general also Lonnie Holiday has a space, and we're very lucky. Our friends are constantly like, whatever you need, if you need a space. But so we're going to be doing our retail full steam ahead as of this weekend, And so we're going to be really concentrating on that because it's something that we know that we can sort of fulfill on our end and hopefully have some fun treats in store for the holiday season. And, you know, once we get that kitchen, you know, things are going to look really different for us, but, you know, not really on a break as much as just kind of concentrating on the things that we can do.
It's like trying to figure out how to prep in two or three different spaces based on their schedule and their hours and how many different, you know, dinners or events or orders we have. And I think it's just like, it's exhausting. And we're just like, we just need, like, we live on the fourth, you know, floor, and like, we have a lot of our kitchen equipment being stored in our apartment, and it's not very big. Like, we have dry storage, metro shelves, everything. And then we're just bringing it to our friends' kitchens constantly. And we're just like, I can't, like, we can't live like this anymore.
We're like a mobile restaurant.
So. I love it. Alex and I lived like that when we were starting to, it was like literally the boxes of inventory were starting to like tip over and fall on us on the sofa when we sat down. We're like, it's time to get an office. Yeah, so we get
it. It's an important part of building your business and a necessary part, especially if you're bootstrapped like we were and like you, sounds like you are. But at some point it does become a challenge of efficiency. You're spending so much time, and then you lose some of your passion for what you're doing because you're literally schlepping stuff around.
Our favorite saying is still never not schlepping, but
that doesn't go away.
Still doesn't go away.
You're 40 years in, it's still like,
I mean, no one talks about the unglamorous side of this industry, and it literally is just schlepping shit.
But I think that's, you know what, that's just being a business owner, a small business owner. There's always going to be unglamorous shit that I think people are like sometimes too proud to say, but like, that's why Alex and I literally joke like once a week, we're like, never not schlepping, 10 years in, still schlepping sometimes. And it's just like, it's just part of like, you're the business owner, you're the dishwasher. Sometimes you're sweeping up the floors, and that's just how it goes.
Tell us a little bit about, where are you retail? How do people find you? What kind of events are you willing to do? Like, if I'm a customer that's heard about you, seen you on Instagram, how do I eat your food?
Well, so we're going to be doing a pop-up this week at Poppy's to launch the frozen pelmeni, which we aren't actually officially announcing until Friday. So starting Friday, what date is it?
It's the 19th.
Starting the 19th, we're going to be launching our frozen pelmeni at Poppy's, and we're actually in conversation with several other places in Brooklyn. We just haven't confirmed anything yet, I think our goal is to be able to tap into different neighborhoods. So that everybody can,
we want to bring the pelmeni to the people.
We really
pelmeni
love it
to the people.
So we're going to be doing that. And then hopefully after this week, we'll also have maybe some more information to share with everybody about, hopefully we're very,
all the teaser posts.
I wish we actually, like, we're not even like trying to tease people. We're like, we're waiting to find out. Like, we would love to tell everybody, but we also,
but I would like to know too.
I mean, we're a pop-up, and we know people are frustrated because, you know, we get messages and they want to know when and where and what and how. And we're like, we would love to do that, but we need a kitchen. Like, we gotta do it right. And so for right now, we're still taking custom orders. December?
Listen, I love the holidays. You love the holidays. We love intimate dinners. You know, Eastern Europeans really take the holidays and celebrations, you know, very seriously. And
we actually just started, we updated our custom order sheet, and it's actually, I don't know if either of you have ever been to a Russian banquet hall, but we call it a concierge sheet. And it, when you go to a Russian banquet hall, they have different tiers that you can order from for you and your guest, and they just pummel you with food and like different tiers of service.
So yeah, it's the Dacha experience, and it goes from our bronze level of service to our platinum tier. And it basically caters to all sorts of different inquiries and events, and
as well as budgets. And, you know, it's also fun for us to be able to do like really like crazy, like, you know, different events with people or like dinners. And obviously right now we have a cap, but we do our best to try to see any of our other friends that are now working in their restaurants, and most often they end up helping us or we help them. So yeah, it's kind of fun to, we kind of take each inquiry and we're like, can we do it? Let's do it. Let's see who's not working or has a day off. And you know, that's kind of where we're at right now until we get that kitchen. So
you're crowdsourcing your sous chefs too. I like it.
Essentially, yeah, we're taking everybody.
Awesome.
Tell us a little bit, who do you feel like your customer is right now? Do you feel like you have Eastern European people in New York that have not had access to good food? Do you have, you know, younger people that are interested in trying something new? Who's the Dacha customer?
It's funny because I think that we have a couple of different demographics that we've tapped into, but I think it's okay to say and safe to say the Eastern European Jews have come out, and they have come out with flags from whatever country they came from. They're so proud. They're so excited. My background's Latvian Ukrainian. And, you know, when we first started this project, I don't know. I don't think I fully understood the scope of what we were doing and how it would impact the community. And, you know, I myself identify as queer. Me and Trina are, you know, a married couple who've created this business, you know, featuring and highlighting this food that is from a region that is widely known for their unpopular opinions and views of the queer communities. And it's been really incredible to see this Eastern European queer Jewish community, you know, really kind of come to us and say, you know, I am so happy to see that you exist, or I, you know, ate your food and I felt like I was with my people and I belong and I see my culture and me represented in your dishes. And it's, you know, it's a joy and a pleasure, and it's a lot of pressure too, because, you know, we know how important that feeling of community and belonging is.
But we're also competing with memories. And when somebody is like, this is what I remember this being like when, you know, I was home, or like we had a couple people the other day that like were from Moscow and they had such an intense story and they're like, but your pelmeni brought me back, or, you know, your kievski brought me back. And it's just like, whoa, like this is real. Like we're doing it.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what food's all about, connecting to people and, you know, creating that emotional response. That's why you do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely why we started, and it's beautiful to see it in action.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills, combined with the freshest milk available, created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
All right. Well, we like to play a little lightning round game with our, it's not really a game, just like quick rapid fire answers. We pretty much ask all of our guests the same thing, just like slightly tweaked to whatever their business.
With lots of mystery, but here we are.
I know. Right. Here we are. So
what's your favorite dish from the pop-up for each of you?
Jess,
she forgot. You like, no, it's always going to be the house pelmeni, our traditional house pelmeni filled with ground chicken, onion, tossed in sour cream and dill.
What are a couple other of the variations?
Oh my God, there's so many.
No, my favorite,
popular ones.
I mean, my favorite, and I think it was a really popular one, was the green disco.
I knew you were going to say that.
We did it in the spring, and it was like one of these like weird brainchilds where I'm like, I don't want to just do dumplings. Like, I want to cook. And so, not that it's not cooking, it's just like sometimes you want to be able to, like, you know,
experiment.
You want to experiment and you want to bring the seasons into stuff. And I think that's what we've been trying to do with Dacha. And so we use all of our leftover herbs from like the service before, and it's mostly dill, parsley, and then we add spinach, and we make this green dough. And like, you smell it when it comes out of the freezer, and it just smells like herbs. It's so awesome. And we fill it with our hachipuri filling, mm-hmm. and toss it in butter. And just the hachipuri is, I'll let you describe it.
It's our play on the Georgian cheese bread, hachipuri.
Oh, yeah.
And so feta, mozzarella, ricotta, and goat cheese.
And so we stuff that dough full of it and toss it. And the green disco specifically was like everything that was green that just came into season. And we just like put it all together. And it was just like,
it's spring on a plate.
It was just so good. And I think that's forever my favorite dish that we've done.
I mean, melty cheese never goes wrong.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. So we just did favorite dish. What's been the best-selling dish at the pop-ups?
I mean, it's definitely the pelmeni again. it's the pelmeni and the Soviet cakes.
I mean, when we started doing our shrubs, that was a little crazy.
Our shrubs.
The shrubs were crazy.
No, I do. I think it's the Soviet cakes. You can't really find them in the city anymore unless you go to Brighton Beach, and they're not really making them in-house so much anymore, as from they're getting the like boxed Roshan like frozen Soviet cakes.
Yeah, you got to tell us what all these, break it down for us. I'm like an Eastern European Jew and I have no idea what half of this is. It's like, I'm getting a real education.
In the 1950s in Russia, they started in Kiev. It was the Karl Marx Confectionery Company. And so they were producing all of these like Russian Soviet cakes, and they were mass produced, and they were sold all across all of the former Soviet Union countries. And so there's so many people that have such specific memories. And it's like, if you saw the box, you knew exactly what the person had in the box. But so a lot of the different ones were, so one of the originals is the Kievsky, which is one of the cakes that we do, which is different layers of de quoi with a custard mousseline buttercream. And it's filled with nuts. And we get a lot of requests for like our Medovik, which is our 10 layer. It's the caramelized honey cake. We do a spatak. So like, it's so many, they like have like dozens of different flavors and assortments.
I mean, if you ask like what I'd like to see us do one day, I just want like a whole like cake menu. Like a whole Soviet cake menu that people can order from. I just think it'd be great.
That's next on retail.
After the pelmeni.
Yeah.
And what about the, we always ask this too, what's your best food cost item?
The pelmeni.
You like this? Our flatbreads.
Yeah, the flatbreads are pretty solid.
I think the flatbreads are our pierogi. We were doing for a little while, we did a play when we had our residency at Kit. We were doing Vanya brunch on the weekends, and we were doing this dish. So it was a play on pierogi, and pierogi are Ukrainian fried like yeasted doughs filled with different things. And we did like a bacon, egg, and cheese one. One of them had like paprika potatoes, but basically it's like a breakfast donut filled with all of your favorite breakfast staples.
And they're actually ridiculously large too. So.
Yeah, they were really big. It was like the size of your head.
And you could take it anywhere. So it was perfect.
Sounds amazing. Tell us your favorite or best business resource that you've used today. That can be a person, it could be a website, it could be a book, it could be anything.
Oh, it's all our friends. It's like all of our friends.
You want to name them?
You want to shout out in specific? Or?
All right, let's go down the list.
All right. Eric from Ursula Insurmountable, Lonnie Holiday of Brutus Bakes, Zara Tangora from Zaza Lasagna, Karen Thomasone from Layered, Woldy's from Woldy Cucina, and Jeremy from Augie's.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been our core of like, anytime a problem comes up, anytime we're terrified, we don't know what we're doing, we call one of them. And I feel like it's, you know, without our community, you know, none of this would be possible. So they're definitely our go-tos. It felt like an acceptance speech for the Academy Awards.
A little bit, but we liked it. I mean, you know, community is also like, talk about themes that come up on the show a lot, and community is always like one of them. And I would say 90% of the time we ask this question to people, it's typically another person that they say for their best resource. I would say like maybe 95% almost every time. So we love it. We love it. We love it. It's awesome to shout out people who've helped you along the way. All right. So next thing we like to do is our opening soon announcements. Any exciting businesses or restaurants or ventures that are opening soon or reopening? You want to shout out?
We already mentioned Augie's. They just finished their first week. And if you're into Hungarian, Austrian food that is so incredibly delicious, we've been there already 3 times this week.
Yum.
And probably again tomorrow. It's incredible. And Jeremy and his entire team are doing amazing things. And Zaza of Zaza's Lasagna, Cesara, they're starting their pop-up again. So she has a residency that's resuming on December 3rd at Shelsky. So every Friday she's taking pre-orders for all of her lasagnas and all the other fixins.
And if you have not had the lasagna from Zaza's, like,
we dream about
it. We actually have, like, we trade with her a lot, but we've most often every winter had her frozen lasagna, and it's just like one of the best we've ever had.
Love a bartering system. Zaza's, yeah. Lasagna. I know. We're like
looking it up right now. Zaza's,
yeah.
Lasagna.
Oh, so good. And I think she's actually just posted her menu. She's doing a pre-sampling before her pop-up really kicks off with a like Thanksgiving offering.
Interesting. I'm just curious as just last question before we wrap up. I'm curious as like, as we sort of head towards this like new normal and the pandemic's, you know, starting to wind down, do you feel like pop-up culture, because it became so strong during the pandemic, is here to stay as like a long-term sustainable business model? Or do you think this is, we'll see bridges into something else?
I think that some people who started as pop-ups will continue as pop-ups. And then I think there's going to be people like me and Trina who are expanding maybe on what the idea of a pop-up is, because I think there's an idea of impermanence in the notion of a pop-up. And I think we're trying to sort of find a more grounding way to continue that. But yeah, I think they're here to stay.
Well, I mean, I think it's a really fun, interesting way to try new things and experiment and do the industry differently. So cool. Well, we thank you for your time today. Ali, you want to wrap us up?
Sure. Tell us where we find you on social and website and all that good stuff.
Yeah. On Instagram, we're Dacha_1946. And for all inquiries, we just tell people to send us an email to 1946dacha@gmail.com.
Cool. And this episode will actually probably air next Tuesday. So it will be after your official announcement.
Yes.
You're at Poppy's. So if you're listening to this, Dacha is available at Poppy's in Brooklyn.
No spoilers after all.
Yeah. You can pick it up there. If you want to find us, we're at Tillit NYC and at We Are Opening Soon. Thank you all so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place, and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.